and I often wonder if anyone else can see the many nuances in an iris that I do. But I could feel him with my gift, with my heart. Deep inside, Christian. So deep I'd almost missed it. Nestled an evil black pearl within a tightly closed, blindingly white clamshell. But it wasn't a small pearl. It was gargantuan, filling every atom of his being, and he'd compressed it somehow. He'd taken an inconceivably vast, twisted, terrifying abyss of darkness that churned within him and turned it into a zip file of sorts, buttoned it up, and locked it down. A darkness that could swallow whole, obliterate. A darkness that seethed with ambition, hunger, mind-boggling sexuality and need. He'd managed to contain an infinity of evil within a tiny glowing white shell in which I couldn't spy even a hairline crack. How? I asked, as we passed over Belfast, soaring toward the ocean. I've felt the capacity for such evil in only two other vessels, the Shisa Du and Cruz. I've never seen such enormous darkness contained, locked so completely away. I couldn't even get a feel for what it was. There was something, a subtle flavor of him that identified him as the prince he was.
Death is my kingdom. As the light court is one of dreams and illusions, the dark court is one of realities and nightmares. The Seelie have spring, summer, autumn and winter. We have death, war, famine and pestilence. But hold your questions, lass. It takes energy to maintain that control, and yet more to mute the Shivajai. So long as I'm diverting power, the most taxing of my abilities are challenging. We'll stop in the highlands to rest, and I'll tell you what I can. For now, enjoy the view.
We flew out over the angry, frothy, white-capped ocean pounding at the shore, then farther still, where the swells gentled for miles into dark starry glass. When we passed over the lowlands, he swooped beneath the clouds to graze clearings where night creatures leapt and played, then soared again for the bird's-eye view of patterned acreage, field and stream. When we finally arrived in the highlands, the beauty took my breath away. Mountains soared to majestic peaks, before plunging sharply to carpeted vales, lush and burgeoning with life. The song had awakened Scotland as vibrantly as Ireland, transforming the plants, shrubs, and trees to a verdant sprawl, given rise to a population boom in the animal kingdom.
Nessie's back,
he said dryly.
You wouldn't believe some of the things that have returned.
Such as the old gods, I said.
You know about them.
I swept a tangle of hair from my face. A bit. We could certainly use more information.
Almost there, lass. I've a favorite peak. We'll talk soon.
I returned my gaze to the heather, tumbling in lush profusion over the hillsides, the silvered grasses, the flowers that bloomed between every crack in every stone. I'd never been to Scotland. I'd never left Ireland. I would bring Ray to see this. I wouldn't let her grow up as sheltered as me. I wanted her to see the world, experience every wonder, know them intimately, the better to love them. We touched down on a large flat rock atop a white-capped ben. As he lowered me to the ground, I stumbled, unaccustomed to having my feet on the ground, and he set me steady again.
What do you think?
He asked, and in that moment, I heard only a Highlander, proud of his country, seeking a compliment from a tourist. Scotland is enchanting. And now I know why angels have wings. It's their reward. He smiled, pleased, and waved a hand.
Pull a cushion near the fire cat. There is a chill up this high.
I glanced where he'd gestured. A crackling fire leapt and blazed in a stone pit that hadn't been there before. A cushion and a blanket waited nearby. How did you do that?
Small things are easy. I encourage matter to shift forms, become what I want it to be.
This? I reached for the cozy throw of purple and black tartan.
The Kelter colours, fashioned from a carpet of moss beyond the rocks.
The fire?
A thought. Stones become logs, a combustion of air, an invitation of heat.
I thought fey magic was mostly illusion.
Aye, for the Seelie. They favour form over function, beauty over value. Transforming matter takes more energy than sketching illusion, and they're lazy fucks. Still, you do well to never underestimate them. The moment I assume it's an illusion, I end up trapped in it.
Then you've had dealings with them. I settled on the large flat cushion near the fire. He dropped down to a boulder near the flames and laughed darkly.
That I have, lass. They've been trying to capture Sean and me for quite some time. When that failed, they began to offer various enticements. We're enemy number three. Max enemy number one. I hear Jane is enemy number two. But I'm getting ahead of myself. There is much I need to tell you.
Wrapping myself in the woolen throw, I drew near to the fire to listen. 22. In a Goda Davida, baby. Illyrium in Fae loosely means the Forbidden Garden, or Dark Paradise, depending on who you ask. And it was overload. The only thing about the club that wasn't in-your-face erotic, enhanced by opulent illusion, was the exterior, faking normal in a faking normal city. Once you passed through those tall gold and alabaster doors, reality fell away, and the dream began. The music was surreal, sensual, erotic, with a rhythmic driving beat that made me think of an old Enigma CD blended with Pussifer. The club was an anachronistic mix of exotic natural beauty and ultra-sleek technology. Blossoms tumbled from stately urns, scenting the air with night-blooming jasmine, amaryllis lily, and winter hazel. Lush vines bursting with black and red poppies twined around grand Romanesque columns. The place smelled of verdant forest, steamy tropical hothouse, and sex. The walls, ceiling, and floor of the foyer were giant, borderless LED screens smeared with fae-slash-mortal porn unfolding in graphic detail. God, I so did not need to see that. In off-putting, larger-than-life format, with fae-enhanced colour, texture, and sound. As I stalked across the anteroom, two enormous, stunning fae males having sex with seven humans ground and pumped beneath my feet, and I swear, both fae turned their heads in the floor to look at my dress. When I stomped sharply on one of their eyes, the bastard laughed. Exiting the foyer into the second anteroom beyond brought us out on a balustrade draped with yet more vines and drugging blossoms from which we could view the entire club. They'd further taken a page from Chester's by dividing Illyrium into numerous individually themed subclubs, staged around a single central dance floor that was packed with humans and fae gyrating, grinding, having sex. I'd never seen so many casts of Seelie before, vibrantly etched in the dazzling, seemingly Photoshop-enhanced shades of the four courts, the blush and rose of spring, threaded with metallic green, the dazzling countless golds of summer, autumn's copper and crimson fire, a thousand frosted shades of winter's ice. Tall, tiny, large, dainty, some flew, some glided, all hunted. I narrowed my eyes. I dialed back the volume on my she-seer senses the moment we stalked into the club, muting the cacophony of so many fae clustered in close quarters. Mac told me she hears the individual casts as melodies, pieces of song that play inside her head. I do too, but my perception of the various casts is heavy on the percussion. A kind of Godsmack's Battle of the Drums meets Roisin Murphy's Ramalama Bang Bang. They're some serious dissidents for ya. Tonight I was getting something else too. A thing I'd never noticed before, or never heard. There was a low, annoying buzzing sound beneath it somewhere. A sort of distracting static on my channel. Something about the dance floor wasn't quite right. I nudged my volume up a hair, to no avail. I dialed it higher, and still nothing. I cranked it even higher, until the presence of so many Fae was deafening, charring a hole in my gut. With supreme force of will, gritting my teeth against the savage onslaught of primitive drums beating in my blood, telling me to kill, kill, I punched it up yet one more notch, going wider open than I'd ever before been. I'd never needed to. Oh! There wasn't a single person on that dance floor. It was empty. I could see that now. But no other human could. Holy insidious illusions. The Fae had gotten better at glamour. The Shidon needed to know about this. Like the foyer, the dance floor was fashioned of brilliantly lit LED screens, featuring still more graphic images of humans having sex with Fae streaming across the surface. I dialed my volume higher, wincing as the presence of so many Fae crashed and banged inside my head with the storm and thunder of the Ride of the Valkyries meets the worst, most bone-chilling parts of the Requiem. Oh, God. There were no Fae having sex with humans in a TV screen at all. It was only humans. And they weren't images on the surface of an LED screen. They were real, live people. Trapped beneath it. Some were clawing at the bottom side of the floor trying to escape. Others, oh God, others were dead. There was a tangled, seething mass of humanity, some fucking, some fighting to escape, amid hundreds of corpses. What was this? If you stepped on that treacherous dance floor, were you abruptly sucked below, never to be released again? Forced to make the choice of either dying, trying hopelessly to escape, or dying doing something that felt good? While the icy Fae sat by, soulless, emotional vampires feeding off the passion of human suffering, savoring each morsel of torment? I thought only the Unseelie were so depraved. Was this what happened when the Light Court ran unchecked by a queen? They devolved to the worst possible version of themselves, like the worst of humans cut loose when the world went to hell and indulged their basest urges to riot, loot, and pillage? How many people had we lost over the past 2 years in this damned club? I dialed my volume back down to see the club the way humans did. Above us, a starry sky twinkled at the high-domed ceiling. Around us, four courts decorated as the seasons beckoned. It was utterly lovely, seductive, and pain-free, and utterly false. I turned it up again, blasting my channel wide open. We were in a living hell. The interior was completely undecorated, but for the LED panels, concrete walls, concrete floors, and I'd been wrong. There was only one Seelie court in attendance at Illyrium, the iciest of them all. The others were illusion. Winter had claimed our city. We're going to kill every last one of them one day, I gritted.
Agreed. For now, objectives and get the fuck out.
Agreed. We glided into motion and began to descend the staircase together. Before we even reached the bottom, heads whipped our way, conversation stopped, and a tight, suspended hush fell over the club. The silence had fallen so abruptly, I scanned the sub-clubs, certain the Fae had killed their human partners. They hadn't. They'd immobilized them somehow. They'd known we were here the moment we stepped inside the club. They'd permitted us to walk in. Been waiting for us. This was not what I'd envisioned happening. I'd imagined a small skirmish, with the majority of Fae otherwise occupied. A bit of bear baiting. We'd saunter off, laugh, having stirred up enough shit to get some answers about what was going on in Faerie. As it was, we were the sole focus of a thousand Winter Court Fae, rising, approaching, closing in on us. From below, from above, behind the balustrade and the foyer beyond. They surged in a glittering, icy wave, moving with predatory, inhuman grace. The power they radiated was exponentially greater than I'd ever felt coming from a court sans royalty, and with my sense wide open, I could tell there wasn't a single prince or princess anywhere in the club. Royalty's melody is unmistakable. Drums from hell, seductive, hypnotizing, mind-stealing. The Fae had changed. Even their gazes were different, no longer shimmering a uniform, swirling iridescence. Lethal as razors, they sliced into you, each a unique color, for lack of a better word, though I'd be hard-pressed to name the shade. Here a tint of immortal decay, rot, and graveyards. There the precise nuance of toxic nuclear war without end. Here the hue of rabid, bone-stripping hunger. There the stain of madness galloping down on you with thundering hooves. I used to mock them. These strutting, beautiful, but relatively innocuous fae, without royal blood. They'd struck me as posers, who weren't what they pretended to be, bidding us believe they possessed far greater power than they did. Now, your average Winter Court Fae was... I had to force my brain to accept the truth. Viscerally terrifying. Objective one accomplished. We knew our enemy was far more powerful than they'd ever been. The song definitely changed them, Riadin, I murmured, as we drew to a halt halfway down the stairs.
No shit, Sherlock,
he agreed. In spite of the gravity of our current situation, I smiled. It was about damned time he'd finally gotten our roles right. 23. I would give everything I own. If Dancer had lived. There's a rabbit hole I've fallen down a few times. Sometimes reluctantly, other times on dark nights, Shaz snoring beside me, one of his downy legs kicking restlessly in my dreams. Unable to sleep, I've walked deliberately to the dirt-crusted edge and plunged down. Gone exploring that fantastical killing wonderland of madness, monsters, and maybe. His brains, my superpowers. What kind of babies would we have made? If Dancer's heart had been whole, if, say, he'd taken the elixir of life, what daring feats of bravery and brilliance might we have accomplished together on behalf of the world? Batman didn't have a single superpower, unless you count his inner darkness. Dancer definitely didn't have that. But maybe inner lightness is a superpower too. And he had that in spades. Shazam could have babysat. Not. He might have eaten them. But still, Shaz is the ultimate kid's best friend. The children we didn't have would have flat-out adored him, bragged about him to all their friends, and Shaz would have loved that. And if they'd zoomed around, we'd have moved somewhere I could have zoomed along with them, and we'd have feared nothing. I don't even know if my ovaries work. I don't know everything Rowena did to me. There were chronological gaps in her narcissistic journals that implied oodles of missing volumes. Another rabbit hole. I have no idea who my father is. I'm not sure I even had one. All I do know is every journal of the old bats I ever found contained zero mention of my patriarchy. Such a complete omission on such a critical topic is, to my brain, completely damning. So maybe those adorable little kids, with Dancer's dark wavy hair and beautiful sea surf eyes, were never a possibility. Maybe Riordan's right. Maybe I'm not human. But I'm getting ahead of myself. 24. The throne belonged to Kongsvinger, to Kachin, the witch's glove.
You will find
a towering, pale-skinned fey male with waist-length silver hair purred to Raiden, pushing through the crowd.
Even for an abomination like you, some of us are far more difficult to kill.
It was 2 against 1,000. Sucky odds. I narrowed my eyes, modifying my assessment. Beyond the fey, 7 black beasts began to prowl silently forward from the perimeter of the room. Yes! It took immense effort to resist my urge to fist pump the air. The 9 were here. Thank you, Raiden. Had been all along, perhaps melted into a trellised column, camouflaged as a piece of furniture, or more precisely, blended chameleon-like with concrete walls and LED screens. They can sense their own hallows, the spear and sword if they get close enough, which, Mac says, has to be within 12 feet or less. But they can't sense the 9, which makes them Fey enemy number 1. One of the 9 can sneak up right behind them and kill them before they even know a threat is in their vicinity. As far as I know, nothing can pick up on the 9's presence. I once asked Kat what she felt when she was around them, and she'd said, "Not a bloody thing. Complete and utter silence. They don't exist at all." I'd thought at the time what a gift that must be to a woman who never escaped the vast, combustible, and often terrible emotions of the world. Talk about a ground zero. Hers was a gift I'd never wished to have. I pick up way too much of the world's terribleness without enhanced empathy. A wintry fey female, draped in an ermine-trimmed snowy cloak, and a throng of obsequious courtiers, sliced imperiously through the cluster at the bottom of the staircase and moved to join the male. I committed every detail of them both to memory, marked them as mine. Savagery blazed from her ancient eyes, in a face so bloodless it was tinged blue. A sneer bared sharp white teeth and the flicker of a pale, restless tongue. Long lashes were dusted with glittering crystals. Her hair was so colorless, frosted with tiny, translucent diamonds, it reflected whatever shade she stood near. Her nails had been sharpened to cruel points, 10 incessantly tapping ice picks. "She's becoming a princess," I murmured to Raiden. As she wasn't yet fully transformed, she lacked the deadly burn of the Shiva Jai, the killing sexuality endemic to royalty of the Light Court.
"Already got that,"
Raiden growled. "The only reason we did not transform into royalty before, the only reason sniveling humans assumed our rightful places was..." "Time on our world diminished you," I cut her off, "making us more powerful." "But no more," she spat, delicate nostrils flaring. "The courts are once again strong, and I am Winterborn." When she stomped her foot, a thin layer of ice gushed forth, coating the floor between us. When she stabbed me with a gaze of storm and frost, my breath painted tiny ice crystals on the air. "Give me the sword, human, and I will not make you suffer." Her eyes narrowed to slits of fiery ice, and she purred, "Much. At first." Objective 2. She wanted the sword. Mac was alive. But where? Every fey in the club was glancing beyond my shoulder, staring hungrily at my weapon. The 9 moved stealthily nearer, melting through the sea of fey in that nearly invisible way of theirs, seeming to morph from one fey to the next, and although inhuman heads were swiveling, alien eyes scanning, they remained just beyond fey vision, causing a stir with no concrete point of focus. "Where's your queen?"
"She is not our queen,"
and will never be. The pretender is worse than dead, she said, with a hard rhyme smile. In other words, I said, smiling icily back, you have no bloody idea where she is, and it's chafing your fairy ass, isn't it, honey? Riordan made a sound of choked amusement beside me. Amusement vanished, and she spun in a whirl of ermine-trimmed cloak, snarling, take the sword from her. Shave the bastard to pieces no larger than a newt and bring her to me. Mostly intact. As she stalked away, she left a thick layer of ice in her wake, and all I could think was, that's going to be a bitch to fight on, envisioning us slipping and sliding around, trying to kill each other. We were too closely surrounded for me to kick up into the slipstream, but I didn't need to. Riordan grabbed my arm and yanked me up into his. Straight up. Bloody hell. I have never once managed to achieve a perfectly vertical ascent. Yet another challenge to work on. As we went, I kicked off my heels in anticipation of battle. A vast black tunnel stained with crimson blossomed around me. Then we were slamming down hard on the opposite side of the dance floor. Winterborn spun, snarling from the far side of the club. I said, bring her to me, she screamed. What is wrong with you imbeciles? Must I do everything myself? She reared back and flung two long, slender, icy white hands at us, releasing dozens of glittering, deadly ice picks.
Slipstream, now!
Riordan snarled. I don't think so, I snarled back. He shoved me up so hard and fast, I went tumbling head over heels down his black and blood tunnel, where I wasted precious seconds trying to figure out how to shift out of his mode of travel and into my own. I finally regained my balance and kicked into my long, starry passageway, then shifted abruptly down into freeze frame, stripping off my left glove and yanking my sword from my back with my right as I went. I thrust my sword into the first fae I saw with a long overdue roar of satisfaction. One down, 1,000 to go, I thought fiercely. I plunged into the carnage. The bastards thought to kill Mac, thought to take our world, had been torturing and killing our people for 2 long years, unchecked. In the periphery of my vision, I could see the 9 flashing their way toward Winterborn, leaving slaughtered Fae in their wake. She was precisely who we needed to kill, to buy time before another princess would be born. And I knew what Riordan was thinking. Kill her before she became lethal to me. The Sibajai is my kryptonite. If turned on me at full force, it shorts me out, renders me helpless. We'd had no idea new royalty were being born. Not a bloody clue. We'd been cut off for too long. I spun, I stabbed, I whirled, I battled. I came back to life in Illyrium, being what I needed to be, doing what I was born to do. Fae after fae fell beneath my blade. Then Riordan was behind me, and we moved into flawless formation, fighting back to back.
I told you to get the fuck out of here,
he growled over his shoulder. Tell the sun to leave the sky, I growled back.
It does when night moves in. I'm night.
Scientifically untrue. The sun remains, you just don't see it.
We've accomplished our objectives. Retreat.
Not the boss of me.
Bloody hell! Don't I know that? Something's wrong. The bitch is losing Fae left and right and doesn't care. She's waiting for something. I'm pulling the plug. Now!
But it was too late. I'd argued too long. The debilitating, soul-searing burn of the Sivajai slammed into me and charred my insides to useless ash. Jane, I stuttered. He must be here somewhere. Find him. Kill him. That bastard. He wasn't in hiding with his family. He'd been working for the Winter Court, likely offered amnesty if he brought them my sword.
I will. Get out!
Riordan roared. But I couldn't. Nothing was working right. I thudded down into slow-mo and crashed to my knees. Then Riordan had me and was flinging me over his shoulder. Don't touch my left hand, I screamed, rearing up on his back like a cobra, desperate to keep the ungloved, lethal appendage away from him. A prince sifted in directly behind us, blasting me with staggering sexuality, and, as he reached for me, I ached to go to him, burned to be his slave, hungered to worship my master. I managed to retain a grip on a single shred of my mind, smiled sweetly at him with utter adoration, and offered him my left hand, silently begging him to seize me from Raiden's shoulder and take me to paradise. Dark, unholy promise burned in his gaze. Blood pooled in mine as I proffered my deadly hand. Take me, I willed. He accepted my submission as his royal due and reached. As our fingertips met, an explosion of high voltage stabbed up into my head, shot down into my body, and as it flared to lethal life, the Fae Prince exploded into a thousand fragments of pale white flesh and paler, sharp bone. Bits of him rained down on the club, and as the killing grip of the Shivaji released my mind, I caught a glimpse of Winterborn's pale, incredulous face in the crowd. Then Fae began to scream and trample each other in their haste to escape. I kicked up, launching myself like a rocket from Raiden's shoulder, vaulting high into the air, desperate to get away from him, because the voltage was still arcing and crackling inside me. Off balance, I missed the slipstream entirely, slammed into the floor, rolled and sprang to my feet. Whatever I'd set free inside me wasn't done yet, not nearly exhausted. It was still building. Building, and I had no idea how to control it.
Danny! Get back here!
Raiden roared. I had to do something with it before he grabbed me again, before I sent it shooting into him. I was not killing Raiden. I'd done it twice before and hated it both times. I spun on Winterborn and flung my hand at her. At the precise instant, she thrust two pale, slender, icy hands at me. Bolts of lightning exploded from my fingertips, one after the next, shattering her ice-summoned weapons, blasting a path through them as I sent my power gunning for her. Holy hell! She sifted out! I missed! Furious, I slammed more bolts into the walls, into the floor. If I couldn't kill her, at least I could obliterate their horrific club from the face of our Earth. I dumped energy from my body in powerful surges of lightning. Then, abruptly, I was sailing in space, crystal clear and cool, surrounded by an infinity of stars on a nebula painted canvas of black velvet sky. It was vast, but I was enormous. It was ancient, but I was too. It was timeless, but I was without end. There was wind here, gusting, swirling waves of it buffeting my body. It felt as if I might catch one and go shooting up, higher, higher, before channeling the borrowed velocity to dive beneath a moon, perhaps go ricocheting out around a star. I'd always thought space was still, but it wasn't. It was living and flowing, ebbing and changing. Not emptiness here, but some kind of dark matter that defied understanding. The stuff of the cosmos, rife with possibility. As if all the hopes and dreams and desires that had ever been and would ever be were nestled deep within super-dense molecules of darkness we could never comprehend. And every now and then, something came along with wings or melody. Rippled against that dark matter, stirring it up with lightning and song, with bolts of extreme high voltage, changing, waking, beginning something new, stitching things together in ways that defied comprehension, making connections, forging patterns and symmetry from chaos. I felt a great breeze then, and turned whatever head I had into the wind. An enormous, black, Hunter sailed along beside me, head rocking gently as it buffeted the waves, lips pulled back as it chuffed softly and turned its gargantuan head to fix me with a single glowing orange eye.
Ready?
I frowned. For what?
I fly.
I see that.
You fly too.
What was it saying? That I might remain here with it, flying through the greatest unexplored territory of all? Discover the secrets of the cosmos? Behold its ancient mysteries?
All of that and more.
But my people, this wasn't my world. Mine was in danger once more, and probably always would be. My world needed me. I had a job to do. I closed my eyes, willing it all to go away. When I opened them again, I stood blinking repeatedly, blinded by the sudden harsh light, the jarring transition. I was in the club, but things had changed while I drifted in the cosmic vision. The surviving Fae had vanished, sifted, flown, or run away, leaving behind only the dead, the Nine, and me.
Danny.
Raiden's voice seemed to come from a great distance. I blinked again, staring dazedly at the destruction around me. Walls were splintered and crumbling. The floor was cleft by a 50-foot-wide crevice with jagged edges that dropped to a bottomless abyss. The LED panels had been shattered, spraying bits of glass and wiring everywhere. And those people trapped beneath the floor were gone. I shivered, fallen to their deaths down the gorge I'd carved. A small part of my brain said, a better death than the one they were facing. A bigger part said, yet more people you failed to save. The structure of Illyrium groaned, as timbers contorted in a hopeless effort to accommodate the compromised foundation.
Danny,
Raiden said again.
Honey,
I heard Lore say.
Can you hear us?
I nodded tightly.
Put your hand down, Danny,
Raiden said softly, carefully. I hadn't realized it was still raised. I stared at it, turning it this way and that, trying to process it. My left forearm had sprouted darkly beautiful obsidian thorns. It looked like a black velvet studded opera glove. I forced it to drop to my side.
Look at me, Danny,
said Raiden in a low, intense voice. I turned slowly and met his gaze. His eyes flickered strangely, swirling with shadows, and I saw, as clearly as if he'd spoken the words,
God damn, I was right. She isn't human. I knew it.
Then,
shit. This wasn't at all what I expected. Fuck.
The words hadn't come to me in the usual manner of his silent communications, deliberately telegraphed. I'd gotten an entire memory attached to his first thought. Nothing with the second. He hadn't believed I was human since he saw me outside Temple Bar as I'd stood watching street mimes, laughing my ass off, one hand shoved in my pocket, the other cramming a cheeseburger in my mouth. I'd had two black eyes and was badly bruised, still drunk on being able to freeze frame all over the city before I learned to lock my mental grid down. But that wasn't when we'd met. We hadn't met for some time after that. Still, he had a flawlessly detailed memory of walking up behind me, stopping a matter of mere inches from my back, pausing for a moment, inhaling deeply before vanishing in that eerie, instant way of his. If I'd sensed an electrifying presence behind me, I'd written it off as my own excitement at finally being free in the world. He'd known about me long before he came to find me on that water tower, to rope me into working for him. I tried to ponder that thought, but my brain was sluggish and uncooperative. I couldn't access any of my mental vaults. Was this how normal people felt? How terrible that must be. How did they even stand it? I had sludge in my head. My legs went out from under me then. As I slumped to the floor, I cried out to Raiden, "Don't catch me! Don't touch me! I'm dangerous!" Raiden smiled faintly, but it didn't reach his eyes.
I think we've figured that out.
Falling. Belong. Etymology. Old English, gelang, at hand, together with. Definition, to be suitable, advantageous, appropriate, to have the proper qualifications, especially social, to be a member of a group, to fit, to be attached, bound by birth, allegiance or dependency, to be a son, daughter, mother, father, lover. Families belong to each other. I have no idea what the word means. My mam said I belonged in a cage. But I know better. I've never belonged anywhere. Danny O'Malley.
25. What have I become, my sweetest friend?
Hey, Shazmataz. I greeted him with a weary cheer as I trudged into my bedroom and flipped on the overhead light. He raised his great shaggy head from the mattress on the floor and peered at me, scanning me intently from head to toe. It was a look we'd often given each other after battle, ascertaining whether the other was okay. His violet eyes widened.
You're thorny,
he exclaimed.
That'll be a trillium scratch.
One of my old passwords used to be thorny bitch 314159, a combination of how I sometimes felt, plus the first 6 digits of pi. I considered choosing more wisely in the future. That I am. I assume trillium's good.
The best,
he enthused, but sobered quickly.
Are you all right, Yi-Yi?
He fretted.
It grew again.
I'm fine, I said, slipping out of my dress. I'm going to wash up. Then I need big-time cuddles. Oodles of them.
And we'll put the mattress back up?
You betcha. I headed for the shower. Raiden had dropped me off and left, seething, a few minutes ago. I couldn't help it. I needed to be alone. I'd gotten used to being alone. Something was happening to me, and I wanted time to focus my brain on it. I'd had to rest for 5 solid minutes before I could push up from the floor, leaving the shattered, collapsing club behind. I wasn't about to let anyone pick me up and carry me out. Although I no longer felt the exhilarating, terrifying, wild voltage inside me, I was taking no chances. While I'd gathered my strength, Lore had picked through the rubble, searching for my shoes, but they were nowhere to be found, which pissed me off because I loved those shoes. I'd worn them once. The others had remained in beast form in case the Fae decided to try to circle back for another attack, which I found highly improbable. They'd gone 2 years without a single threat, and we'd just killed 100 of them, if not more. The possibility of death is something Fae avoid like humans avoid Ebola. I wanted to ponder the ramifications of our actions tonight, but at the moment, all I could think about was myself. My confusion had abated, but I was still shaky and weak. Raiden, meticulous planner that he is, had snacks stashed in the Ferrari, and I'd inhaled candy bars one after the other before shoving half a bag of chips in my mouth. I glanced at the mirror and raised a brow, thinking wryly, aha, that's why they were all staring at me like that. Blackness had taken more of my pale Irish skin. Not only was my left arm a thorny black glove, the stain had spread further into my flesh. Exotic black flames arced up the left side of my neck, curving over my jaw, my cheek, to my temple, and into my left brow. The pointed tip of one of those flames ended a mere inch from my mouth. The mouth, it was suddenly acutely aware, it hadn't done nearly enough kissing. The 9 had closed in protectively around me as we walked to the car, which I found hysterically funny, given what I'd just done. Killed a prince without using the sword, destroyed a club. Raiden had argued with me all the way back to Sanctuary, demanding I return to Chester's with him, demanding we talk. Lacking the energy to argue, I'd looked at him and said simply, "Please, I very much need to be alone right now." I know Raiden. Had I argued, he'd have debated me forever. But my quiet plea had taken the bite out of the wolf, and, bristling with barely restrained testosterone and anger, he parked and escorted me to my door, saying tightly,
If you need me, call. Text. Throw up a bloody bat signal. If I don't hear from you first thing in the morning, I'll be on your fucking doorstep, beating down the door.
Only after I promised had he growlingly conceded to leave. I stepped back and assessed my naked body in the mirror. I like my body. It's strong and lean and suits me. I should be horrified by what was happening to me, but I couldn't help but think I looked kind of beautiful. My entire left arm was covered with lovely dark thorns. I had no idea why I thought they were lovely, but I did. They weren't ugly or scary looking. They were as gently curved as the thorns on a rose, larger with slightly blunted tips. I ran my hand over them lightly and shivered. They were cold but extraordinarily sensitive, as if entire clusters of nerve endings were nestled at the tips. The barbs ended just beneath my shoulder, but the inky blackness had seized territory on the left side of my torso as well, from beneath my armpit to my waist, shooting more of those ebony flames across my stomach and breasts. On someone else, I'd have found it wicked cool. An otherworldly tattoo, woman of obsidian fire. On me, although it was stunning, not so much. Unless it went away, I would never again feel a man's hands touch my breasts. Unless it went away, I would never again taste Riordan's kiss. Faces touch when you kiss. There was no way a man could get near my mouth with more than a chaste peck, and I'm not a chaste peck kind of woman, as I'd amply demonstrated this morning. God, that felt like a lifetime ago. I'd have kissed him harder, longer, better, if I'd known this was going to happen by nightfall. I forced my thoughts to focus, turned from the mirror and began to tally what I knew. Fact. I stabbed a hunter when I was 14, and my hand turned black for days. Fact. It kept happening over the years. Fact. I'd recently developed an extraordinary superpower, the ability to shoot highly destructive bolts of lightning from my hand, capable of blowing structures apart and killing Fey royalty. I smirked a little. Ha! Take that, the nine. I'm as badass as you. Fact. Each time I used the power, more of me turned black and icy. I frowned. Inaccurate. The blackness hadn't expanded when I killed Bridget, nor when I used it to break the paralysis spell. Or had it? Just not where I could see it. Staining deeper beneath my skin, opposed to wider. Were my bones black now? Fact. When I used the power, it drained me to a degree that appeared to be increasing with use, or perhaps with the magnitude of use. Fact. If anyone touched the black part of me, they would die. I would kill them. Poison ivy much, I muttered. That wasn't who I planned to be when I grew up. She was Batman's nemesis. I was supposed to be the Bat, only with superpowers. Fact. If I kept using those incredible lightning bolts, it seemed highly probable I would turn entirely black. I wondered if it would affect my hair, too. Would my eyes turn black? I tried to envision myself all black. Pretty odd. I stepped into the shower and stood under the spray, pondering whether, as Shazam had suggested, I might be able to make it go away. Maybe, if I never used it again, the stain would retreat and I'd return to normal. It had retreated once early on, to beneath my elbow. Was it cumulative somehow? Was its mysterious endgame inevitable and irreversible once it had begun? I toweled my hair dry, tugged on sweats and a tee, grateful Shazam was impervious. At least I had that. Assuming I survived whatever was happening to me, I was going to become that strange Hellcat lady, eccentric and alone. It could be worse, I mused, as I headed back to the bedroom. I might not even have Shazam. I, who at best had never known more than a tenuous connection to the world, was becoming even more cut off, more isolated, by my own skin. I'd always been dangerous, now I was lethal to the touch. My first year in a cage, my mother had showered me with affection, before she'd left in the morning and again each night when she got home. She'd washed and dried me, brushed my hair. We'd held hands through the bars. She'd rubbed moisturizer into my skin and tickled my back, and I'd known we were going to make it. That older and outside were a guarantee. I'd known it from her touch. You can feel love in someone's hands. It hadn't stayed that way long. Her affection became more and more infrequent. Until, finally, she'd stopped touching me at all. Then, not long after, she'd begun to stop seeing me too. When I could no longer remember the feel of her hands on my body, my hair, of soft kisses pressed through bars, when those kisses had become a hazy memory that belonged to another life, some other child, I'd lain in my cage and hugged myself, turning my head from side to side, kissing my shoulders, my arms. My small body had ached for touch, for comfort, for love, as it did now. I hoisted our mattress back up onto the box springs, stretched out on my back, and opened my arms. Shazam flung himself at me, landing squarely on my chest. Ow! Rumbling, eyes gleaming, he headbutted me with delight, then snuggled into my killing embrace. And, as I'd done so often Silverside, I squeezed my eyes shut to hold back tears, and held on to him with all my might. 26. The rusted chains of prison moons are shattered by the sun.
First cat,
Christian said.
A summary of pertinent history. Try to hold your questions till the end. The timeline I'm giving you is approximate. The Fae aren't glued to the concept of time. They have an affinity of it to squander. I had to plug bits and pieces of history together with few points of reference.
Understood, I said. We encountered the same problem with the texts we'd translated. Points of reference were vague at best, like tying our historical events to whatever TV shows were popular at the time, and someone trying to figure it out millennia later. If he possessed an overview, I very much wanted it.
The first significant mention of the Fae appears approximately 1 million years ago, although they existed long before that. Originally, there was a single light court of four seasons. The Light King became dissatisfied with life at court, left and declared himself the Dark or Unseelie King. Sometime after that, he met his mortal concubine, became obsessed with her and sought to make her immortal like him. Since the Song of Making was a matriarchal power, he had to petition the Light Queen to transform his lover. It was when the Queen refused that everything began to go to hell. The Unseelie King retired to his dark kingdom, vowing to recreate the song and make his lover immortal himself. The Unseelie or Dark Court was born as a result of his endless experiments. As far as I can tell, he spent roughly a quarter of a million years working on it. Again, approximate, I believe Cruz was born 750,000 years ago, and was one of the last remaining Dark Court the King created. As you know, Cruz betrayed the king to the queen and told her what the king had been doing, about 500,000 years ago. Cruz wanted the Unseelie court to roam freely in the world, mingling with the Seelie, which was forbidden by the king. The king knew what the queen would do if she discovered he'd created a dark court of his own, especially if she learned that the mortal lover she so despised was still alive, secreted away in a realm beyond time to keep her from aging. When the queen learned of the Dark Court's existence, it started a war to end all wars. When Seelie and Unseelie clashed, they destroyed their own planet, splitting it down the middle. The unthinkable happened. The Unseelie king killed the Seelie queen before she was able to pass the Song of Making to her successor. The song was all that kept the Fae powerful. They alone possessed that ancient melody of life.
No doubt stolen somehow, I said, unable to resist the acerbic comment. No god I believed in would have entrusted a thing of such power and beauty to such a shallow, power-hungry, ruthless race.
As you've seen, the song seeps into reality and replenishes fading magic. Once they lost the ancient melody, the Fae were doomed. Over time, they would have grown weaker until they vanished on the wind, with only legends of them remaining.
But when Mac used the song to heal our world, they were restored, I said grimly.
Precisely. What the melody didn't destroy, it made stronger. As happened long ago in the mists of time, the song sank deep into the fabric of all things and crooned Awaken. Another of Mac's double-edged swords. That woman does tend to wreak havoc from time to time.
I began to protest, but he waved it away.
I ken it, lass. She had no choice but to use the song, or the cosmos itself would have been destroyed by the black holes. We're lucky she was able to wield it, and I'm grateful. But no action is without consequence. Indeed, there are times the most desirable, correct, necessary action results in catastrophic consequences. We're facing them now. Back to the timeline. Subsequent queens move the light court from world to world, draining yet more power from the court each time they moved, desperately seeking a planet richly steeped in magic. They knew they were diminishing bit by bit. Many of them drank from the cauldron of forgetting, to forget how powerful they'd once been, how weak they were becoming. Eventually, around 200,000 years ago, they discovered our world, which still pulsed with considerable magic. But it was already occupied by both gods and ancient man. It was a peaceful time on our planet before the Fae arrived. The gods were mostly benign, and although they occasionally warred among themselves, they cared for and tended the mortals who worshipped them, and there was a strong bond between them. The Fae, deceitful bastards that they are, feigned far less power than they had, and begged sanctuary from the gods, claiming their world had been destroyed through no fault of their own. The gods, sensing no threat, gave the Fae a fair amount of land, and things were peaceful for a time. But the Fae were busy gathering intelligence, desperate to seize and rule our magic-rich world. They covertly studied the gods, seeking weaknesses. Their attack was patient, stealthy, and a shining example of slanted press on a global scale. They abducted the gods one by one, used their Fae glamour to impersonate them, and began punishing, torturing, and killing humans. To humans, it seemed their gods had turned on them. In kind, humans turned on their gods, and the gods that remained turned on their humans for betraying them, for refusing to listen when they tried to explain what the Fae had done. Then, the great, benevolent Fae finally stepped in to rescue humans. The gods realized the Fae had been concealing their true power all along, but gods can't penetrate the glamour of the Fae. And the Fae gathered up and killed most of the deities on our world, leaving a scattered handful of those too powerful to kill, or those who devised ways to elude their clutches. I've no idea how many remain, but I'd wager a few hundred or so. Those gods they couldn't figure out how to kill. Unlike Fae, all gods can't be killed by two commonly known weapons. Each has one unique way they can die, and it's a tightly guarded secret. They captured and entombed them in the earth. They relinquished one of their most powerful Sheans, or Fae mounds, to use as a prison. For a long time the gods slumbered in the soil, faded to mere wisps of their former selves. But when the ancient song was sung again, it awakened and released them from those tombs. The gods had learned from their mistakes. They came back weak, as mere shadows, and bided time as stealthily as the Fae once had, laying low, absorbed.